Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of From Complex to Queens, Home Run Applesauce's minor league podcast. I'm Lucas Vajos, I'm joined by Thomas Henderson and Ken Levin. How's everyone doing this week?
Good.
The weather is finally nice. It's absolutely beautiful outside today, and couldn't be enjoying it more. It's great.
No longer frightful.
We will have this for... Well, no, let's think about how this is going. We're going to have a month of, like, alternating between this and the Smarch weather where, you know, it's like 60% Smarch, 40% this. And then it'll be 90 degrees and humid all summer, like starting mid-May.
Yes.
And I'll want to kill myself because I truly cannot stand that weather. We love the climate, but actually it's a La Nina year now, so maybe it'll be a little bit cooler. Fingers crossed. It couldn't possibly be worse than last summer. That was just unbelievably awful. Anyway, my kvetching about the weather aside, we'll jump into promote extend trade. And the Mets just finished winning 2 of 3 from the Royals. They beat Cole Reagans with Jose Budo on the mound, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But it seems like we've picked up another one of these odd memes from the crowd, so to say, at Met games that the broadcast has adopted as a thing. This dude, and I don't know what to call him, the disco guy, like he's out there in a very colorful boa jacket thing with big curly hair. Really, like, the dude's just leaning into it, and it's great. I'm sure there's some official name for him on Mets Twitter that I'm missing, but you almost certainly know what I'm talking about. So promote extend trade this week, I thought we'd go through a couple of these over the last 20 years, just because it's always a fun part of watching games to see how these develop. So the three we'll consider, obviously the disco guy. Second, the infamous rally parakeet from the Cespedes days. And then this is a shout out from Steve that I was admittedly not aware of beforehand. But Who Let the Mets Out, Baby, is a thing from the from 2000, which is before I have any real memory of baseball games. So among those three crowd memes here, promote extend trade.
I feel like the new rally guy, it's too early for me to promote or extend him because it's like 10 games, well, a little more than that, like 20 games into the season.
Are we 20 games into the season already?
About. The Mets are like 7-8 or something, so I'm approximating, but yeah. The rally parakeet feels like it was so organically funny because it just kind of showed up, and then people were wearing like neon yellow arm sleeves.
I forget people stuff. Cespedes was wearing
it was so funny, and like that was a really fun moment because that team was actually pretty fun, even though they it was like a weird fun, that 2016 team, I think that was. But
the yeah, that parakeet was 2015, wasn't it?
Was it 15 or 16? I don't remember.
I definitely did a lot of research for this. August 13th, 2015. This was this was when Cespedes hit his first home run. Where a parakeet came from to show up at Citi Field, I couldn't tell you. I've always wondered that. Like, whose bird is this? Maybe Steve knows.
Yeah, right. Like, whose bird is it actually, too? But I think the rally parakeet edges out the Who Let the Mets Out, because the Who Let the Mets Out stuff was so 2000s coded in, like, a specific way. Like, because that song was huge at the time and all that stuff. But the rally parakeet was so funny. And it was like a parakeet. It was chilling.
I'm with you completely here. Honestly, same. I have nothing additional. All right, well, we're all aligned. That doesn't make for very interesting content now, does it? The parakeet was so good, just because it was so. To your point, Thomas, like the song was pop, was big in pop culture. This dude in the audience is new, but it's also just a dude. The fact that the parakeet is a totally random natural occurrence, I think, really adds to the mystique. It's almost like the black cat in a way. Like, it's not somebody leaning into a bit. It was just, oh, this bird wandered in and suddenly we're unbeatable. It's incredible. So yeah, the rally parakeet was so much fun.
Yeah, exactly. It would be up there with like the rally monkey of Angels lore.
I forgot about that one, honestly. That's a good one. If I had put more thought into this, I would have like gone digging for other examples of rally animals throughout baseball history, but I don't have time for that, so I didn't. Anyway, rally parakeet. I hope this disco guy takes off. I hope the Mets are good enough for him really to be fun. Worth remembering. That'd be fun. Okay, so off that, let's jump into our draft updates. And as usual, I have the shortest one, so I'll go quick here. Michael Massey continues to not look great. We recorded last Saturday. He pitched after we recorded. Four innings pitched, five hits, three runs, two earned, two walks, three strikeouts. This was against Virginia Tech, their 20th, the 20th ranked team, according to Baseball America. That start was okay. And then today he walked five and three innings and only struck out two. Now, he didn't give up a ton of runs, but, you know, the problems here are obvious, right? The command continues to elude him. He's not going deep into games. He's on a pitch count both because he's being stretched out as a starter and because he's working his way back from injury. Just I thought I'd be really excited about this profile, and now I'm extremely lukewarm. I don't even know that he's someone I'd be super excited to take in the second. I think there might be better names there, honestly. I mean, we'll see, very far out from that sort of conversation, but not the best pick on my part. I don't know that I've ever been this disappointed in one of my draft follows in however many years we've been doing this.
And it's gone wrong in the ways that you like worry that it would have too.
Yeah.
You know? Which
I don't think the vision was wrong. Like, it's weak.
No.
They're good at this. There's raw stuff. A lot of things to like here. Now, maybe the injury is just bigger than we're giving credit for, and I forget exactly what the injury was, but maybe that's just derailed everything, and he is still someone to get excited about in the second. It's just more of a project, and you know, maybe you get some untapped value there from just getting him healthy. But yeah, not certainly nowhere near, shouldn't be anywhere in consideration for 19. I should add, since we have Baseball Prospectus's draft board, I think this is their first ever big board, or at least the first one they've done in recent memory. So another great triangulation point. This came out earlier this week. Michael Massey was 36th on that board, and that was before his Sunday start, though. So I would anticipate he still, you know, slides down this a bit further. Someone who is in consideration at 19, still Slade Caldwell. No major updates. I saw a couple, again, still no high school stats available for him, really, but saw a couple more very positive scout tweets. Saw some open side video. His bat is, like, his hands are insane. I don't know how his hands move that fast. The swing is definitely not geared for power. He doesn't use his lower half particularly well, but there are a lot of raw ingredients here. I don't think this is a guy the Mets will pick. It does not fit with Astros style picks of recent vintage, and the Mets hired Chris Gross. So that's, you know, kind of what you'd expect, but a lot to like here still. Also 3-3 shutout innings on the mound, including striking out multiple D1 commits with a changeup, just because, you know, why not, high school baseball. Caldwell, I believe, checks in at 24th on Baseball Prospectus's list. So definitely, you know, in that range, just not someone I think aligns with what we expect the Mets draft philosophy to be.
Yeah.
Totally guessing, because we have no idea what that is actually going to look like in a couple months. All right, who wants to go next?
I can go.
Go for it, Ken.
So Kirsten Bench had a pretty good week. He went 9-for-24, basically, because we recorded on Saturday last. I've got six games this week. So he went 9-for-24 and hit 375, 500, 792. with a dong, a triple, and five doubles.
that'll play. Good.
He walked in almost 22% of his plate appearances and struck out in just 6.25%. So let's see, who did he play? He played Oklahoma, which is a good program, and then Wichita State and Cincinnati. So, but Oklahoma being a good, you know, not the weakest schedule. And now on the season, he's hitting 321, 449, 586, 15, striking out a little over 15% of the time, walking close to 20.
Oh, the greater than one walk to strikeout ratio. You're speaking my language now.
The best. Pitching wise, he threw three innings, gave up four hits. I believe his first two runs of the year. Struck out three and walked none. So
this is You've got me fully bought in on this guy. I gotta say, Ken, like this is also
he's much, performed.
Oh yeah, he's performed. Yeah.
Very much aligns with Astros and Brewers style picks. Like this is a name I think like you might have nailed it this year. This is a name that seriously makes a lot of sense in the Mets at 19.
Well, where is he on the baseball prospectus board?
They have him at 17. So
oh, okay.
In that general, they have him as the last name in tier two. Their tier two being just surefire first rounders. So in the running there, it sucks that tier two stops at 17 and the Mets pick at 19, obviously, but a couple of these guys will certainly also will fall, this board will change and also a couple will fall. And if it's Benj, I'd be very down for that pick, certainly.
I like college polished college hitters. He's one of the better ones in this year's class. So on the pitching side, Drew Beam had a pretty good week. He made two starts, going seven innings in the first one, gave up two runs, one earned, and 6 2/3 in the second one, giving up no runs. Across the two starts, he struck out 13, walked four, did give up 11 hits, but only three runs. So pretty good week juxtaposed against last week's, which was pretty rough. And during this past week, his ERA was just 0.66. He's getting relatively close to, he got relatively close to striking out 9 per 9 and walked about 2.5. So on the season, his ERA is back under 4 at 3.16. Strikeouts per 9, just under 8. Walks per 9, 1.75.
Okay.
Definitely stock up better than last week, but I'd still expect him to slide a little bit further.
Do you guys remember the discussions we used to have either on this podcast or just, you know, Mets fans generally back in the Worthen era where we talked about what kind of pitchers the Mets should take? Like, are you confident you can get stuff jumps out of guys? I wonder if, first of all, if the Mets are actually good at pitching development now, like maybe there's an argument they could get some of those same gains out of Beam. That makes the polish seem more appealing. I don't know. I have not seen the pitch metrics on Beam personally.
Me neither, really. seems like the type of guy you could teach like a hard slider to, given that his primary secondary offering is a changeup. I think it's probably a little easier to teach the slider than traditional off-speed.
Going Jose Bluto, speaking of.
Yeah, there might be a little. Yeah, and there's a blueprint of guys in the system that have fit that kind of profile. So I don't know. We'll see.
Interesting. Okay. Thomas?
Okay, so I'll start with Cam Caminiti because he didn't finish, right?
Were you about to ask what rank he is on the board, Ken?
Yeah, yeah.
48th.
Okay, yeah, that jives.
So that'd be, in line for the second round pick. He's sandwiched right between Chase Alsup and, I don't know if you guys remember this name, because he came up a couple times when he was a prep arm, or rather two prep arms, Jurangelo, how the hell do I say his last name? Sanja, the switch pitcher from Mississippi State. So he's right in that range.
Gotcha.
Okay, Thomas, Floor is yours.
I'll start with Caminiti because he actually had his first bad outing of the season. He still struck out 10 in five innings, only gave up 4 hits, but he gave up 3 runs. He gave up 4 runs, 3 of them earned. He didn't walk any. He walked 1. So I think it was a little bit of bad luck, only giving up 4 hits and 3 of them were earned. It was probably some loud contact and it happens. But I mean, it raised his season ERA to like 1.04. So it happens. It is a little interesting that it happens right after a pretty long pitching break. This is only he pitched on March 25th and then didn't pitch until April 9th, and then that's what it was. So I wonder if something happened. I hope not, but that's kind of curious to me. But otherwise, I'd probably just chalk it up to stuff happens. Like, nobody's perfect, even if you're much better than the competition. Sometimes things will happen. And Kalen Culpepper had like an okay week. He went 6-for-18 with 3 RBI, but he only had 1 extra base hit, a triple. So I think that's the biggest reason why he would be around at 19 and not going higher, is because the power is kind of inconsistent. You know, the extra base hits are, I don't want to say few and far in between. They kind of come in bunches. Like a few weeks he'll hit like 3 or 4 doubles in a week and hit a home run or something, and then next week he'll hit a bunch of singles. He also struck out 5 times, which is not like the worst, but it's also not the best. He did play Oklahoma over the weekends, and they're, like Ken said, they're a good program, so it's a little stiffer competition, and he still fared mostly well. He did hit the triple off Oklahoma, but for the most part, that's like, I would consider that an okay week for a top prospect. It's not a great one. But I mean, his bad weeks haven't been like, I think one thing that I like about his season is his bad weeks haven't been like, oh, he went 0-for-10 or he went like on this huge strikeout streak or something like that. Like, he just hit singles instead of doubles or whatever, you know? And if that's his slump, then that means that there's something there. But I think our team could tap into his power a little bit more because he is 6 feet. He's almost 200 pounds. Like, there's a frame there that he could hit for more power. Sure. He's only hit 1 home run this year. But, oh, no, I lied. That's not true. He's hit a few home runs. He's hit like 4 or 7, actually. So he's hit 7 home runs this year. That's not amazing power, but it's not awful power. But I think there's more to unlocked. But I think a team can unlock it. If it's the Mets with how their hitting development has gone, I'm not sure. I trust their pitching development a lot more as we sit here right now. And my big question mark with Stearns was that the Brewers never really developed hitters. They only developed pitchers. But we'll see how the Stearns Mets do with developing hitters. Like, Jett is obviously someone that has been developed by the system, even though Stearns didn't do it. All their other top hitting prospects they traded for. So I'm curious to see how they develop bats, and I don't know how that necessarily goes, but yeah, he was fine. And Caminiti had a bad outing, but it is what it is. And he still struck out 10 and only gave up 4 hits. So it's not like he got lit up.
It has to be, I mean, being a high school baseball player, and I guess this is true in most high school sports. Like, you face a pro and it's just depressing, like a future pro, and it's just depressing how little of a chance you actually have. Like,
yeah.
This dude does not have his best stuff and he still struck out 10 of you.
Yeah. Like, probably the only people who got hits, because obviously I didn't watch this game, probably the only people who got hits were like other guys who are going somewhere, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they also, they won 11-5, so it didn't even matter. Like, it's not like they lost either. Like, they won 11-5, and so, okay, like, it doesn't even matter that he gave up they scored 3 runs in the 4th inning, and they were already losing by then, so.
Dude's probably, you know, just throwing strikes so he can get home earlier and play Fortnite or something. Yeah, whatever, like, the Zoomers are playing these days.
It's one of those, and the team had 3 errors behind them, so who knows how many. Like, obviously one of the runs was unearned, but it could have been poor defense that landed to, not every hit is created equal. Sometimes a hit is not a pitcher's fault, and it's still, even though it's not an error. So, like, obviously there's context to this stuff, but I mean, he's good. I wouldn't let one start worry me. And if you strike out 10, it's not like the stuff was heavily diminished.
Okay.
Where are they on the board?
Caminiti is 28th. Kalen Culpepper is 43rd.
Oh, because he's a little lower, so that's in line for second round. I would definitely look for. I think he's more. I'd be more comfortable with him in the second round, I think, than the first.
Yeah.
Because of the lack of power, but maybe he's a guy you take in the first if you're trying to go under slot and then you do something spicy later. Mm-hmm. I could see that too, but I don't know. I don't know if he's very Astros-y.
No, I mean he lacks the. I mean, it's interesting, right? Because he lacks the EVs that the Astros would typically target, but the Brewers have taken a lot of these questionable power guys, you know?
Yeah.
Tyler Black, Mike Bovey, Sal Frelick. And I certainly, you know, I like Sal Frelick. I really like Tyler Black. Mike Bovey's interesting. Or is it Bove? Whatever. So, I don't know. I would expect the Mets' philosophy to wind up aligning more with the Astros than the Brewers in the end, though.
That ain't no problem.
Yeah, certainly not on the hitting side. Okay, and just to round out our draft discussion, because I think it's interesting to see who's clustered around the Mets pick at 19. So we already Ken's guy. Too many Cams in this area, so I'm missing up. Phonetic. My phonetics are all screwed. Ken's guy Carson Bench as at 17 would be great. Brody Brecht at 18, not my favorite arm. One of these two sport guys converted from being a wide receiver at Iowa. Really great stuff. Does not know where it's going most of the time.
So he finally gets to touch us a ball that he's playing in a game with. So play baseball.
I don't even know if he was playing it as. I don't know enough about college football to know if that program is good or not at football.
They run the ball a hilarious amount.
Ah, I see. So your joke makes more sense now. You can understand why he switched sports. This much like Massey, the strike throwing was a question here, and it has not really improved. You're just this is like a real upside gamble, right? Like you get this guy in and see if you can fix those issues and polish him up, and then the raw stuff will play. At 19, someone from my alma mater, Caleb Lomavita, an athletic catcher, could play the outfield, the defense. She's not as surefire as a defender as the other catcher in this class, whose name I'm forgetting. Cozart. He's not a surefire catcher as Cozart, but, you know, has high-end EVs, 114-mile-per-hour batted balls so far this season. There's some, you know, questions about the game power and how usable it is. It gets a little dinky at times, but I'd actually quite like that pick. 20, they have Carson DeMartini, who I think we've talked about previously, a third baseman at Virginia Tech. And then 21, one of the prep left side infielders in Caleb Bonimer. So all of these guys generally in range for the Mets at 19. Does anyone else, I mean, is there anyone else that sticks out to you as an obvious fit for our best guesses about their philosophy more so than Benj? Because that one just like is beating me over the head as the obvious choice.
I wouldn't be surprised if they take an arm.
Really? Why is that?
Because I could see them taking an arm early because I think they're with how they've developed arms this season, this in their minor league system so far, and with how Stearns has been able to do it. I wouldn't be surprised if they lean that way, but I also don't know. I also don't know how hands-on Stearns is going to be here, and I think we will find out after this draft. You know, if it's more Brewers coded, then I think we could lean towards more Brewers type stuff, and if it's more Astros coded, then I think we could look at Chris Gross and how he does his things. You know, mm-hmm. But
yeah. So you say that, but the Brewers have never yeah, really I guess drafted they took, arms high.
They took bats, right? Because they could develop the arms later.
Yeah, like I'm thinking through that. Garrett Mitchell, Frelick, that's Black true. Was a second round pick.
That's true.
They took the third baseman last year when Stearns was, you know, obviously not involved. Which one is it, Wilkin or the other one?
He was still like his fingerprints all over that. Yeah. Anyway, of course. So.
Yeah, I'd be a little surprised if they went on.
That's true. I guess. Totally I guess honest. You're right. I guess you're right.
William Schmidt is ranked at 22. You know, generic prep righty. I'm sure there's more to say about him, but you know, I feel like everything we wind up saying about a lot of these prep arms, especially the right-hand ones, is usually noise.
It's more what they do when they're in the building than
exactly
for those guys.
But no, I think Ken's tracking to be the one who got it right this
year. Yeah, I could see that. I would be happy with that the way he's been. Lucas, you want a fun fact about Iowa football before we move on?
This should be good. Go for it.
This is according to Doug Farrar at USA Today. Well, it's stats, but he wrote the article. Mm-hmm. They finished the 2023 season with 1,000 more punting yards than offensive yards. So that's how that
offense went. I'm sorry. What?
Yes.
They
their punter is very good. He might go in like the middle rounds of this draft, but because he averaged like 50 yards a punt. He punted 86
Bill Belichick, if Bill Belichick was still around, he's taking him in the first round.
This is an exact quote from this article. In the end, Iowa gained 3,123 yards and punted for 4,156.
Holy fuck. These games must just be
Hilarious
to watch.
They also went 10-3, so because their defense is incredible.
Brock Purdy from Iowa?
Iowa State.
Is that that's a different school?
Yeah, that's their big rival, actually.
Okay, I got that wrong.
But yeah, Brock Purdy went to Iowa State.
That's horrifying. I cannot imagine being a fan of that team.
And also, they're winning. So like, what do you even do with that information? Like they win, they won games hilariously.
I wonder if this still works if they have like a normal college punter. Who the hell?
Oh, knows? Instead of like a guy who's going to get drafted, like in the fourth round.
Well, now that we've all recovered from being flashbanged by those words Tom has shared with us about Iowa football, because good fucking Lord. Let's move into a discussion here about some of the more interesting performances in the Mets system so far. You know, if we just go down the top 25, we actually don't have that much to talk about at the top so far. Jet Williams, kind of middling at AA. Drew Gilbert is hurt. How bad was his hamstring injury? I don't think it was super bad, but
it didn't look that bad. He didn't, like, collapse on the floor when he walked off, but
he's not dead.
Yeah, like, it wasn't one of those where it was like, oh, he might have torn it or something, but he pulled his hamstring. That sucks.
Acuna has been awful.
He's been good recently, though. Like, mm-hmm.
He picked it up hot. This week.
Yeah, he's been hot this week, but he's been awful overall.
Ryan Clifford still isn't hitting in Brooklyn, and you know, is striking out a ton, which is concerning.
Yeah.
Of the ones up top here, that's the only one I'm actually concerned about. Christian Scott has been awesome. We already talked about him. Ronnie Mauricio still hurt. Marco Vargas possibly hurt. We haven't heard any confirmation there. Mike Vassell is just doing Mike Vassell things, as far as I recall. Like, I don't think he's been particularly bad. Oh wait, no, he's been awful. 10 ERA at AAA. Jacob Reimer is on the 60-day IL, and Dominique Hamill has actually been quite good in merits. He's like the only one worth mentioning here, that aside from Scott, who we've already talked about. Hamill's ERA is ugly because his first start was a disaster, but he struck out 10 in 5 innings last outing.
He looked just as good. Honestly, he looked just as good as Scott did the day before, because they pitched back to back, and they were excellent. Like, the poor Woo Sox, man, they were probably like, I'm tired of this.
I'm tired of these high spin fast, or I'm tired of these fastballs up in the zone. Make this fucking stop, please. To be clear, Scott is by far the superior arm, but I still
really like him.
And if he does this a couple more times, we'll have a more in-depth discussion about what's happening there. But there are two arms I think we should. Oh, also one last one. I'll shout out that Kevin Parada looks not dog shit at AA, and that's a marked improvement over what he looked like last year at all levels. Maybe that's a little mean, but you know, finally maybe coming through on that the promise from last year. But two names we should talk about in more depth. One of them is both of them arms. One of them is Jose Buhto, and the other is Jonah Tong. Let's talk about Buhto first, because he just showed out on the day the Mets retired Doc Gooden's number at Citi Field. I didn't watch most of this game. I've caught the highlights, but I was at softball. I don't know if you guys watched it. What did you see from Buhto this outing?
Oh, he looked like a fourth starter. Great, which is perfectly good. Like, he looked great. The changeup was really good. The changeup was nasty. He got so many whiffs on it. His command was also really good. Like, he hung one. There was one hanger that he threw, and it was like the second to last batter that he faced. It was to Bobby Witt too. He just smoked in the corner, got a double. It is what it is. He hung like a changeup, but he was getting whiffs on the changeup like crazy, which was letting him work on off his other stuff. Which the reason why I wanted to talk about him so much was that we were always skeptical of him because it was just like fastball changeup with nothing else.
Yep.
And that's hard to do because a changeup, even though it's good, it's hard to like live off that. But his changeup's so good now, and he has a cutter, and he has a sweeper, and he has a slider that he could throw. So it's like, when that changeup is good and you could throw these other breaking pitches, it's like, how do you know what's coming type thing. But if it's just fastball changeup, it's, unless you're Trevor Hoffman, it is what it is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. He looked really good today. Like, he went blow for blow with Cole Ragans.
And, is it and Ragans was, or Ragans?
Is it Ragans? Yeah, it is Ragans. It's Cole Ragans. He went
Ronald Ragans. How fitting is it that the pitcher named Reagan is on the Royals?
We traded from the Rangers to the Royals.
Perfect.
Well, he went blow for blow with him, like matching zeros the whole way. The Royals really couldn't touch him, and that's a good offense. It's been a great offense through 20 games or whatever this year.
How good is that offense, really?
It's good now. It's been good now. You know what I mean, though.
Oh, come on. Are we really? I mean, actually, Michael Garcia might be quite good, but Nelson Velasquez isn't actually good.
He's their DH. Garrett Hampson out there.
I forgot they signed. How could I forget they signed Garrett Hampson and Adam Frazier? Just all the same dude. No, I think that's I think you've hit the nail on the head about him actually adding other stuff for some stat backing on this. Thomas Nestico has a really nice stuff model, just in that he's good about posting, you know, tidbits from games as they're happening. Buto's sweeper rated out at a 110, making it so 10% better than league average stuff. The slider, cutter, which I think kind of meld together a little bit, 105. The changeup stuff number isn't relevant because none of these models are actually able to capture changeups.
And he said it himself. Like, if you read in the tweet underneath, he said it himself.
This is what you talk to Max Bay, who made Stuff Plus. If you talk to Cam Fisher, who made Cameron Grove, who made Pitching Bot, all of them will say that like none of the stuff models can catch changeups. So if you take at face value or take off the eye scouting that his changeup is good, and it sure looks like it's good. He's got 2+ pitches and 2 other, you know, average ones in his fastball and slider. The sweeper, if the sweeper and changeup are both plus and the command is good enough, like that is a legit number 4, maybe a number 3 starter. Like
if you could sequentially be a number 3, but I would put him as a 4. But that's a great outcome, and it's something that the Mets haven't been able to develop for years, is those guys who you could come up and McGill gets hurt.
Go give Rick Porcello $10 million.
Yeah, exactly. And also, even in season, like McGill gets hurt, and 2 years ago, it's a disaster. Like, and now it's, oh, Jose Buto has to start. Okay, cool. And then he goes out and balls out against the Royals, and they win. And even his other start was good too. It wasn't as good as this one, but it was solid. So, it's even if Mendoza already said that they want to keep him in the rotation. I think he kind of earned his spot, and that's fine. It's fine with me. But if he has to go back down for any point in the season, then he will come back up and just be another depth guy. And if it's not, then he won a job. And that's one less guy you got to worry about next year and the year after and the year, you know, because of how stuff is set up. And we haven't even seen Christian Scott in the majors yet, which could be soon.
First of all, Ken, do anything we miss on that front, or do you think you have anything else you saw from Buto there, or is that basically the picture as you see it?
No, I think we pretty much got it. Changeup looked filthy, but I think we kind of covered him well.
Let me ask that. Well, first of all, I will say that I was very wrong on Buto. I think I've been pretty maybe the lowest ranker on him the last couple of years. I was getting kind of sick of ranking him. Did not see him developing the off speeds this much, and we've talked about this before, but I just kind of don't buy into minor league changeups as much. The changeup's real, and he added, it took him like 3 years to do it, but he finally added some other secondaries. So miss on my part, he looks quite good. Here's the question now for me. What do the Mets do with their rotation? Right now it's set up with Quintana, Severino, Minaya, Buddo, and Hauser. McGill is obviously on the IL with the shoulder issue. Quite frankly, Christian Scott shouldn't be in the minors much longer. I believe the Mets actually have to call if they want him to be eligible to get a, if they want to be eligible for a PPI pick, they need to call him up this week. I in fact think they should do that. So how do you shuffle out the rotation at this point? Quintana, Severino, and Minaya are all healthy at the moment. Hauser has looked fine. I don't think you can bump Buddo after what he just did. And obviously, if you call up Scott, he's got to be there. So do you go six-man? Do you push Hauser to the bullpen? Do you keep Scott down maybe? Like, what's the next move here, given what Buddo looks like at the moment?
I'm okay going to a sixth man. Scott hasn't had, like, that's managing his workload in a more natural way than, like, shutting him down in August or whatever, because he's just pitching less. And Buddo has a lot of innings on him because of minor league stuff, but it's still not the same. And, like, the rest of the guys, like Severino and Minaya, and aren't bastions of health, and Hauser has never been, like, a 30-start guy. And so if you have a six-man rotation, you may be able to get more out of them in a long season where you're just pitching them less. And I'm sorry to McGill, but you might have to learn bullpen, buddy. like I just don't really know how you get him back in the rotation if everyone's healthy. He's the worst. I like McGill, and I don't think he's like awful, but I also think he's the worst out of this group. So maybe Hauser too. Like, those guys are probably the worst two pitchers out of the rotation. And if that's the case, then other teams are way worse off than the Mets are. Like, as good as the Pirates are, they're about to start two TBA guys against the Mets this series. So, like, pitchers are just dropping like flies. But, like, maybe McGill just shifts into a bullpen role, and then you have another reliever, because the bullpen has been good so far, but also it's been taxed a little bit, and there's been a lot of movement in there. So, also, you don't know when he's going to come back. You don't know when Senga is going to come back. And if when Senga comes back, he may need a six-man rotation, because that's a heavy injury on him. So I wouldn't mind going to a six-man.
Are we all in agreement that Scott should get the call?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
He's wasting his time in AAA. Like, I watched his starts in AAA, and he's just better than everyone. It's just he's just wasting his time. I understand why he's not up now, and it's like service time stuff, and I get it, and I hate it, but I get it. But he's just – you're just wasting his bullets.
Frankly, like, he's been – I'm trying to make sure I'm not missing anyone. You've got Paul Skeens. You've got Jackson Jobe. I'm not saying that Christian Scott – if we were to do a ranking, that Christian Scott would be the third best pitching prospect in baseball. But based on what we've seen – like, based purely off the 2024 performance, he's been, like, the third best pitching prospect in baseball.
I get what you mean. Like, in terms of pure on-field results. I get what you – he's been excellent. And he's like 25 years old. Like, it's not like it's an excellent player who's like 19 and you want to make sure, like, there's not much he has left to prove, even though he's barely been at AAA. It kind of, it is what it is. Like, get him into the majors and see what happens. And because if he's good, if he's I think he's probably like a 3-2 ish at his best, right? I wouldn't say if he has ace potential, but like a solid middle of the rotation guy. If that's the case, then the Mets have solved maybe two of their pitching spots next year with Buddo and Scott. And then you roll into next offseason with open the piggy bank for Soto if you want. You could open the piggy bank for an ace instead of worrying about signing three Sean Manaea types, you know? So they need to figure it out also. And getting him a near full major league year will help do that.
I think everything you said there is correct. So it seems like the move should be call up Scott. Six-man rotation. If McGill comes back, send him to the bullpen. The best we saw of McGill was that very brief stretch before he hurt his shoulder the first time. You wonder if some of that stuff comes back if he's in a multi-inning relief role, right? Maybe he can throw 96 without his shoulder exploding. And, you know, with the way pitchers are used now, 2-3 innings out of the bullpen, super useful piece.
I mean, the Mets have 3 quality starts this year, and 2 of them are Jose Buda. Like, they need a guy like that. It's the way this rotation is set up specific. I feel like it's kind of specific to the Mets, but I'm sure it's other teams too. I just watch the Mets obviously more. They have so many 5-and-dive guys. Even at their very best, Manaea's barely getting 6 innings. Sevy's going 5 2/3 instead of 6 because he's running out of gas. And that's fine. It is what it is. That's what it's the fact of the matter. Even Senga wasn't going 7 or 8. Sometimes he did, but it wasn't super often because he's wild. Having a guy to almost piggyback them in McGill to get you to the Ottavinos, who looks not cooked, and Raley, who's been great, and Diaz, who looks back, that would help a lot. That's what you hope Tonkin was, and he was bad, and then they cut him quickly, and that was fine. And Lopez has been all right, and there's
Diekman's been better than the surface level stats suggest.
Yeah, but and it's also he almost got destroyed in Atlanta. He's been, I would say, uneven, because there were some outings he looked really good and some outings where he looked rough.
That's the Jake Diekman experience.
Yeah. And so I think they do need another reliever to kind of bridge that gap. And I think McGill is the perfect candidate for it out of anyone else. Maybe Budo could do it, but I think that's kind of wasting. No.
Yeah. I think you put McGill in the bullpen and you hope you get 2021 McGill for 2 or 3 innings at a time.
Cause I even feel like when he starts, McGill is He's hot for 3 innings or 4 innings, and then you can kind of see him fade a little bit, and he'll get you through 5 and sometimes even 6, but it's always uglier than the first few innings, and I think he just runs out of gas, and that's fine. Seth Lugo made a career here of doing that, and then he reinvented himself, and he's been a better starter than I expected when he left, but still, some guys are kind of better in that role, and I think McGill is a better fit for that than anyone else. Maybe Hauser, too. If you want to go that route.
Well, the next question was, I would I just talked about liking Hamill. I would like Hamill to get a shot at some point. You probably want to give Vassell a shot at some point. Maybe Senga comes back at some point. Who's the next guy that gets bumped? I think you just shove Hauser in the bullpen and live with it there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think those are the two guys. And then after that, you kind of move from there. And also guys are going to get hurt. Stuff's going to happen. Mm-hmm. A lot of this stuff kind of works itself out in the end. And then David Peterson's supposed to come back at some point, which...
Yeah, I would love to see... Hey, the joke for years was that the Mets are going to piss away David Peterson in a trade to the Brewers, and they're going to turn him into an ace. I would love to see what competent pitch dev does for David Peterson.
The absolute funniest outcome is Yeager's is like, oh, yeah, I know exactly what to do when he becomes good. And I'm like, oh, God, it's David Peterson time.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm here for it. So that's Jose Buda, Really glad, that's an excellent outcome. He's not going to be an ace, but, nice find, very nice success for the Mets here. Looking to the low minors now, right? We alluded to a lot of arms that were potential breakouts, and Brandon Sproat and Nolan McLean are kind of a separate conversation. They're a tier above, but we were talking about Wyatt Hudepohl, Noah Hall, Zach Thornton, the other one whose name I'm forgetting. And we all kind of forgot that Jonah Tong was this guy we were talking about last year. And then, he just had a really terrible 2023. For those of you who don't remember, Tong was a 7th round pick. He came out of the draft league, that weird, it's almost like the G League Ignite in basketball, but I don't know, no real good analogy, honestly. Canadian, so a cold weather, semi prep arm. Just an odd demographic all around. Like I said, awful in 2023. And he's come out and just so far in 2024 and just struck out everyone.
He looks insanely good.
Just struck out all the people, all of them. The pitch on, no pun intended, the elevator pitch to Jonah Tong here was, he throws a low to mid 90s fastball with good induced vertical break, and that could be something to build on. Now he throws a 97 mile an hour fastball with induced vertical break out of this crazy overhand arm slot, and no one in St. Lucie can hit it at all. I frankly don't know why he's still in St. Lucie. I think he's wasting his time. They should send him to Brooklyn for his next start. Just for the stats here, he's pitched 8.1 innings. He has struck – anyone want to guess how many batters Jonah Tong has struck out in 8.1 innings?
I want to say 20, but that seems too much.
Ken?
16.
You're both low. 21.
Oh, that was close. Wild.
He's running a 22.68 K9. He has a 0 ERA. He has walked a few people, but good fucking Lord. What?
And he's walking people because look at what he's throwing. Like, mm-hmm. He's got to figure out how to, like, he might never figure out where some of it's going with how much spin it has.
No, like, there is, the fastball is clearly a weapon. He's showing a gyro slider that also is flashing plus. Like, it's not the weapon the fastball is. But this is a huge development win, mm-hmm. right? This is someone where you're like, oh, well, that was a cool flyer, gave up on it. He's going to be a top 10 prospect in the system next year at this rate?
Probably, yeah.
Like, he might be more than that globally if this keeps going. We really, like, he needs to get pushed. I want to see him in Brooklyn sooner rather than later to see if this shit, because if this, this working in St. Lucie is anything working in St. Lucie is almost something of a novelty. It's like, oh, that's nice, that's cute. If this keeps working in Brooklyn, you've got something real on your hands.
What is he like, the fourth best pitching prospect in the system now? Fifth in that area?
Who are we putting above him?
Scott and Sproat and McLean. You could put Hamill above him. For like longevity purposes, but after that, like, you know, Ziegler's been interesting too, coming back from injury.
Sure, that's a good, like, shout out as well.
It's I'm not ready to like plant the flag on it, but man, they're getting some pitching development wins like up and down the system. It's very interesting. It's mm-hmm. it's something that I like couldn't imagine 5 years ago saying.
Well, 5 years ago, the Mets would be signed instead of have the Mets had to sign Julio Duran because of weird, you know, early season option rules. Like, you can't recall anyone before the 12th, and then they had to play someone on the IL but use that spot for a reliever.
And surprisingly, a reliever I complained about, Reed Garrett, who looks excellent.
He looks very good.
Yep. He looks like a leverage reliever randomly because, reasons.
I only bring this up because we've been talking about how much depth they have and then they still have to sign Julio Teheran. Weird early season thing. Previous Mets team would have signed Julio Teheran and he would have been in the rotation for half the year. The Mets were like, okay, we solved this weird corner case. Here's your $150,000. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Yeah. Do you want to go to AAA? No? Okay, see you later.
They don't need him.
Yep. They needed him for one start. They needed him to literally play in Atlanta.
Yeah, we're like, we are not allowed to call up Christian Scott for this start. Yeah. Or Mike Vassell for this start.
Yeah. Or even Budo.
Oh, yeah, they couldn't even call up Budo.
They couldn't call him up either.
Yep. We cannot call any of our arms at AAA up for this.
Yeah.
Just go eat four innings, please.
Yeah, and he ate like two and they won anyway, so.
He gave up four runs in four or something, so.
Yeah.
So yeah, Jonah Tong, super interesting. Get in now, going to the moon. Insert other NFT joke here. And to Thomas's point, I think we're going to hopefully have a continuing list of these guys to talk through as the season goes on, because the Mets might just be good at this now. On that note, let's wrap things up here. Thanks for listening to another episode of From Complex to Queens. You can listen and subscribe to our podcast wherever you find your podcast, whether that's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever else. You can also visit the Patreon for bonus episodes to help directly support the podcasters whose work you've supported for years. That's both us and all the other podcasts in the Home Run Applesauces Network. I don't think we did a Patreon-specific pod this week, but we are doing a lot more of them this year as things goes on, just routinely, whether that's about, you know, how games have gone this week, special things that are happening for the Mets at the moment, whatever. There's going to be a lot of good stuff on the Patreon. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email the show at fromcomplextoqueens@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. Steve is at Steve Saipa. Lucas, I'm Lucas. I'm at ElvLawHost343. Ken is at KenLavin91. And Thomas is at SadMetsSC. Until next week, love the Mets. Love the Mets.